Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. The big news last week and the news that I'm glad to announce, the Supreme Court ruling from January 22nd, 1973, Roe v. Wade, the ruling that legalized abortion in America has been overturned. Or rather, it looks quite evident that the leaked Supreme Court decision indicates that Roe will be overturned when the decision is announced in June. Back in November, a law in the state of Mississippi limiting abortion came before the Supreme Court. And given the conservative majority on the court, it was assumed that in order to uphold the Mississippi law, the court would have to overturn Roe versus Wade, which it has done. And the courts would return America to the pre-Roe era, where states, not the federal government, decides the question of abortion. Since the 10th Amendment of the Constitution clearly relegates these issues to the states. 10th Amendment, quote, "The power is not delegated to the 9 states by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." There's no right to an abortion in the Constitution. There's no right to homosexual marriage in the Constitution for that matter either. But the Supreme Court justices, 9, unelected, 7 who, you know, actually ruled in favor in 1973, had overstepped their bounds and decided to be the moral arbiters of the entire nation, when that responsibility is only delegated to the people through their legislators. Now, what was leaked to the press, specifically to Politico, was Samuel Alito's draft majority opinion of the court overturning Roe versus Wade. Alito writes, "Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. We hold that Roe and Casey must be overturned. It is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives." Well, you know, that certainly turns back the abuse of judicial activism of the courts, where the courts have come to believe that they are the legislative branch of government, that they can make the law, as in the legalizing of homosexual marriage in 2015. Alito also wrote, "Roe's reasoning was exceptionally weak, and the decision has had damaging consequences. And far from bringing about a national settlement of the abortion issue, Roe and Casey have inflamed debate and deepened divisions." By the way, even the liberal Supreme Court Justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, said that Roe versus Wade was a poor decision and didn't settle the issue. Why? Because the court found the right to abortion on the right to privacy rather than, in her opinion, on equal protection. But Ginsburg is wrong in that. The Equal Protection Clause should actually protect the right of the child to live. But we know that the right to privacy, upon which abortion was based, is never a way to decide a moral decision. The issue is whether the action is right or wrong, because a right to privacy could justify any heinous crime, such as I can murder someone because I have the right to privacy. The right to privacy to justify abortion was foolish. It really undermined the entire integrity of our legal system. But in 1973, the justices were just looking for a way to justify abortion and to increase court power, and they found it apparently in the right to privacy. Isaiah chapter 29, verse 21, concerning those who defraud the one in the right with meaningless arguments, or vain arguments. Tohu in the Hebrew, empty, used in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, concerning the fact that the earth was empty and void and without order. So the right to abortion was irrational. For the last 70 years, logic, reason, and justice have been on the side of the pro-life movement. Embarrassing, you know, judges and politicians who have had to come up with silly smokescreen arguments to defend abortion, like the argument of choice. Since when is choice an argument for any moral position? Such as, you know, I should have the right to murder, to rape, to pillage because I have a choice? You know, we hear this slogan, my body, my choice. This is a complete fallacy because the child is not the body of the mother. It's not her body to kill. And this is the fallacy of begging the question, assuming what you're trying to prove. Since the baby is a human being, and that's established throughout the Bible, all arguments for pro-choice are really arguments for murder. I heard one commentator say recently, all the arguments for pro-choice justify a man killing his wife because he's tired of her. It's the husband's choice. It's his privacy. It's his freedom. It's his own religious conviction. But one clarification here is necessary. According to God's moral law, abortion is actually a worse crime than the murder of an adult. And that's the opposite of what most people think. The world thinks that if abortion is a crime, it's a lesser crime because the baby has not yet come into the world. But when you murder an infant, more life is stolen from that person. And it is the murder of the weakest among us, the most helpless, the most needy. And in God's book, that takes a heart of greater evil. Isaiah chapter 10, verse 1. Woe to those who enact evil statutes and those who constantly record unjust decisions so as to deprive the needy of justice and rob the poor of my people of their rights so that widows may be their spoil and they may plunder the orphans. Even during this last week, the arguments coming from the left against the court's ruling were unbelievably irrational, trying to defend abortion on the basis of anti-racism, anti-bullying, anti-minorities, arguing that abortion is healthcare. All of those arguments turn against the pro-abortionists. Because look what they're doing to the babies in the womb. Abortion is the ultimate racism, the ultimate bullying, the ultimate assault on minorities, and the ultimate anti-healthcare. A pro-abortionist even wrote graffiti on a church in Colorado, abortion saves lives. So how does any rational person come to the place where they're so twisted in their thinking that they turn justice on its head, calling good evil and evil good? Or as George Orwell in 1984 wrote that the state slogan became the reversal of common sense truth. War is peace, slavery is freedom, ignorance is strength. Orwell is also known to have said, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable, and to give the appearance of solidity to pure wind. Well, this is what happens to a people when they depart from God. Romans chapter 1, verse 21, they become futile in their speculations, and their foolish hearts are darkened. For them, abortion actually saves lives. Ephesians chapter 4, they become dark in their understanding because of the hardness of their hearts. Now, what happens intellectually is what I discussed last week, that for the left, right and wrong is determined by outcomes, not by objective moral truth. So what is right or wrong is a function of what's good for me. Truth is based upon personal feelings. Things that make me feel good are right. Things that make me feel bad are wrong. Abortion becomes right for abortionists because it relieves them of personal responsibility and work. Personal gain is the foundation for all ethics on the left. And that's why they see abortion as a right. And undergirding all of this is their belief that man is autonomous from God. That's the root issue. There is no God to tell me what to do. I'm my own God. My welfare determines morality, not God. Now, only a very few people on the pro-life side have addressed these deeper issues, you know, laying the axe to the root of the tree. Many pro-life people argue on the same humanistic, pragmatic basis as the left. Here's a piece of Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts responding to the overturning of Roe. There are many clips, you know, showing the emotional anger toward pro-life, but this one will suffice.
Senator, how are you feeling?
I am angry.
Angry and upset?
Angry and upset and determined. The United States Congress can keep Roe versus Wade the law of the land. They just need to do it.
I've never seen you so angry. You seem to be...
This is what the Republicans have been working toward this day for decades. They have been out there plotting, carefully cultivating these Supreme Court justices so they could have a majority on the bench who would accomplish something that the majority of Americans do not want. 69% of people across this country, red states and blue states, old people and young people, want Roe versus Wade to maintain as the law of the land. We have a right.
Dismembering 3,000 children.
We've heard enough from the extremists. And we're tired.
Thank you, Senator. Does this open the door for the constitutional right?
So notice her emotional anger, her feelings of righteousness, self-righteousness. People may look at this and say, well, since her sense of justice has been violated, maybe she is right. Why would anyone who is wrong feel so right in their position? And this is where we need to understand what I've said many times. When your ethics are built upon the wrong foundation, your ethics you build on top of that foundation are consistent with the foundation. And that consistency gives a person a false sense of righteousness. The whole foundation of Warren's ethics are wrong. She is judging right and wrong based upon personal freedom. So that anything that violates one's personal freedom must be wrong. And that's a very deceiving foundation for ethics. And people like Warren will actually believe that God is pro-choice. Because she assumes God's main priority is to allow people to have freedom. That God wouldn't want people to be inconvenienced with an unwanted child. She couldn't even imagine that God would require a mother to put the life of the child above her own personal goals. One of my favorite verses that describes our current culture, describes the darkness that comes upon those who abandon God, those who abandon his truth and seek to live autonomous from God, is Proverbs chapter 28, verse 5. Evil men do not understand justice, but those who seek the Lord understand all things. Do not trust anyone who is pro-choice. Their moral compass doesn't point true north. And if they can't figure out that killing a baby in the womb is murder, they cannot figure out any other matter of justice. Economic justice, family law, business law. Or how about Proverbs chapter 4, verse 18? But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. But the way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. Or Isaiah chapter 8, verse 20, to the law and to the testimony, if they do not speak according to this word, it's because they have no light. Or what Jesus said in John chapter 12, for a little while longer the light is among you, walk while you have the light, so that darkness will not overtake you. He who walks in darkness does not know where he's going. While you have the light, believe in the light, so that you may become sons of the light. Those who abandon God as the center of their life fall into darkness. What I want to do in this program is list spiritual lessons that God is teaching us through this whole battle over abortion over the last 70 years. And one of the main lessons is the moral darkness that falls upon the unsaved, where they will even justify the killing of babies. That's what God is putting before us to see here. And the lesson here is also that moral logic always favors God. And to thwart God's moral law, one has to enter into the realm of irrational absurdity. But that's the nature of evil. In hell, all those unconnected from God will be insane. And I'm not exaggerating, I'm not being facetious. Hell is a place where all the good gifts lent by to man by God will be removed. And all you'll have there is pure evil. But I'm kind of getting off track here. Alito, he went on to write in his majority opinion, and the majority opinion will be the court's ruling. Quote, Roe's survey of history ranged from the constitutionally irrelevant to the plainly incorrect. And Alito's opinion is 98 pages with a 31-page appendix about historical state abortion laws. See, pro-abortionists have been lying and saying that there were never state laws against abortion before Roe versus Wade, when in fact, all states had laws against abortion. And yet, just 7 Supreme Court justices overstepped their authority and decided that all of these states were morally wrong. Before 1973, 38 states had abortion illegal, clearly the majority, a 2/3 majority, and only 6 states recently made it legal in some circumstances. So in America, before leftist historical revisionism, the killing of babies in the womb was always considered murder. Alito writes, "The inescapable conclusion is that a right to abortion is not deeply rooted in the nation's history and traditions. Until the latter part of the 20th century, there was no support in American law for a constitutional right to obtain an abortion. Zero, none. No state constitutional provision had recognized such a right." This majority opinion by Alito makes some other great points here. So I encourage you to find it online in the Politico article and read it for yourself. For example, Alito addresses the fact that abortion was originally based upon eugenics and the elimination of the black population. Also, Alito calls pro-choice advocates abortionists. Alito also addresses the argument of stare decisis, court precedent. This argument, you know, that the public has come to assume abortion is a right, it may not like the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And Alito's point is that the courts have been wrong in the past about many decisions, such as the Dred Scott case, where a black person is not a person, or laws against, you know, laws for segregation. Alito also refutes Harry Blackmun's original argument in Roe that the right to an abortion was found in the 14th Amendment, this so-called right to privacy. Have you ever read the 14th Amendment? Not only doesn't the 14th Amendment give a privacy right to murder babies in the womb, it actually defends pro-life. Quote, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the states wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. That's pro-life. So how do these Supreme Court justices miss the overarching protection of life in the 14th Amendment, totally missing the main point of the amendment? Well, in the same way that in the First Amendment, the justices overlooked the overarching protection of freedom of religion and outlawed the teaching of Bible in public schools. where they took the phrase, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, and used that to override the main point of the First Amendment, that Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free exercise of religion. No law. They cannot prohibit religion. Yet they found a way to do it. And they also found the right to abortion in the 14th Amendment, even though it protects life. So this is the vacuous mind of the unregenerate, justifying what they want to do because they're seared in their conscience. So again, I recommend that you read Alito's ruling posted on Politico, why it helps us to be wise and discerning ambassadors of Christ. Titus chapter 1, to be able to exhort and sound doctrine and to refute those who contradict. But realize that even in this decision, our courts have failed again. Even these conservative justices. There wasn't a single mention of God or God's moral law as the basis for this ruling. These conservative justices are still having to argue on the basis of tradition, public opinion, pragmatism. And in this, they're being fools. They're cowards. They're not truly moving the nation back toward God. They're making arbitrary law. There's a lot to talk about here. It's kind of hard to reduce it all to one YouTube. But let me just list some other lessons we can learn from this whole issue. The first lesson being the insanity of the unsaved. Romans chapter 3, abortion proves that the feet of the unsaved are swift to shed blood. Another lesson is in the leaking of this ruling. That's another Genesis chapter 15, verse 20 moment. They meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. The story, apparently, is that a pro-abortion clerk leaked this ruling to the press, maybe out of outrage, probably to activate pro-abortionists against this ruling. My initial reaction was that the court itself deliberately leaked this ruling just to test the waters, just to break the ruling gradually to the public so there wouldn't be those riots that occur when emotions run high. The leaking of this ruling was actually a good thing because it showed to the justices and to the people that the world did not end with the ending of Roe, that there aren't enough people who care about this issue to protest it. Security fences were put up around the Supreme Court last week and only 100 people showed up to protest. There were more people in the media than those protesting. A USA Today article read, Supreme Court protest erupts. Well, there was no eruption. And all of the news pictures never show a wide angle of the crowd because it was so small. Even these protests in front of the homes of the justices are just a handful of people. The annual pro-life march in Washington brings out between 30,000 and 100,000 people. The January 6th rally brought out, you know, easily 500,000 people. Now, the pro-choice movement may organize more protests in the next few weeks, but really the leak was a positive for the pro-life movement. Likely not what the leaker intended. The overturning of Roe was no big deal for the public. People realize that with this ruling, if a woman really wants an abortion, it's no real hardship. She can travel to a pro-abortion state or take an abortion drug. Not that that's right, but abortionists will still have plenty of options. You know, my guess is that the real reason for the left defending the 1973 Roe decision is that morally, pro-abortionists can't have the government overturn Roe versus Wade because that undermines their moral authority, their argument that it's the law of the land. I mean, for many people, right and wrong are based upon what the state says, or rather the majority opinion. If the state says it's okay, it couldn't be all that bad. But now the federal government is saying it's not a right. And those men and women who have aborted their children, and I include the men too, don't want the state to outlaw abortion because that would indict them as having done something wrong. And so they want to suppress any knowledge that what they have done is wrong. So they will vote for the pro-abortion candidate till they go to the grave, or until they recognize their sin, repent of their abortion. Here's another lesson in the overthrowing of Roe. In that the states now have to decide abortion laws. We will have abortion states and non-abortion states, just like we used to have pro-slavery states and free states. And the separation of the righteous from the unrighteous is a good thing. Evil is always parasitic. It lives off the good. But if evil has to stand alone, it has to reap fully the fruit of its own ways without being able to steal the moral capital off of the righteous. These pro-abortion states will reap the consequences: dying demographics, family problems, the attraction of the criminal element, and it will be evident to all that states that murder babies are bad places. And this is what pro-abortion is. This is what evil doesn't want. They don't want to be left to their own devices. Just like communists don't want to be fully separated from the productivity of the capitalists. And big tax politicians don't want free enterprise businesses leaving their state. And even homosexuals wouldn't want to live in a state that didn't have traditional families. But this separation is necessary. And this kind of separation needs to be pursued by the righteous. Because separation is a way to defeat evil. Leftist universities would die if it weren't for the government forcing people to support them with tax dollars. So this is 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Come out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord. And by sending these laws back toward the states, back toward local politics, pro-life organizations can put greater pressure on state legislators. It's going to be very difficult for pro-abortion states to keep up their lies when other states are pro-life. Now, Christians would have all wanted the Supreme Court to reverse Roe versus Wade and also rule that the Constitution demands that children in the womb have a constitutional right to life. If the Constitution is to be used as a moral guide, you know, the Constitution actually supports the right to life more than the right to abortion, as in the 14th Amendment. And in the Declaration of Independence, the right to life is foundational. So the argument could be made that the Supreme Court should overrule any state law permitting abortion. But that would be in a perfect world. But what we have in this world is an incremental approach, gradually turning back the Holocaust of abortion. So this Supreme Court ruling is a good thing. It will save lives. It will eventually undermine the entire pro-abortion movement. Just like slavery was overturned incrementally. This brings me to another big lesson we should take from all this. Be patient, endure, in due season you will reap if you faint not. Since 1973, pro-life people have been tirelessly fighting against pro-abortion laws. We've been speaking out for those who cannot speak, the unborn, the least among us. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 8, open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all the unfortunate. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and the needy. Would we ever win? Yes, God's truth will always win in the end. Evil will self-implode. So always keep up the fight for righteousness. Psalm chapter 37, for evildoers will be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord, they will inherit the land. Yet a little while, and the wicked man will be no more. You will look carefully for his place, and he will not be there. It's been exactly a 70-year fight, 1972-73 to 2022. The exile of Israel into Babylon was 70 years. From the time another Pharaoh rose who knew not Joseph until the Exodus, maybe about 85 years. Victory over slavery in America took about 70 years. From the signing of the Constitution, 1789, to the overthrow of slavery, the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. What's that, about 74 years? You know, leftists are claiming racism and oppression were built in to our founding documents, that racism is endemic to America. But no, we were founded upon righteous principles. Just took a long time to fight the ungodly and implement righteous law. How long did it take before communism was overthrown in the Soviet Union? 1917, the Bolshevik Revolution, to the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, 74 years. This is actually the fear of the ungodly. This is why they keep saying history will be on their side, because they know in their conscience it will not be. History is never on the side of that which is contrary to God's law. God always wins. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 19. Do not fret because of evildoers, or be envious of the wicked, for there will be no future for the evil man. No future. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. Do we believe that? If we did, we'd be more bold, more confident. We'd convey a better message to the unsaved. That's Philippians chapter 1, verse 28. In no way alarmed by your opponents, which is a sign of destruction for them, but salvation for you, and that too from God. Communism began in China in 1949. It's been about 70 years, and it looks stronger than ever. Looks like it's going to take over Taiwan. But don't be so sure. Communism will soon collapse in China. Even Soviet communism looked invincible right before it collapsed. Homosexual marriage in America will be overturned in 70 years. You ask, how can that be? Well, because it's unsustainable. The perversion and social damage will become so obvious that it'll be outlawed by a future generation that has learned you can't break God's moral law and survive. But that collapse may happen by the hand of God in the apocalypse. This current outbreak of evil may end in the final judgment, where everything gets corrected. And this brings us to another lesson to consider in the overturning of Rome. Since America has become more immoral, not less, how can it be that Roe gets overturned? Is this a genuine turning back to God? Or is this just rearranging chairs on the deck of the Titanic? I mean, abortion will still be practiced, but at a state level. Well, there's an interesting parallel to this in the history of ancient Israel. Israel was judged for the abortions that took place under King Manasseh for 52 years. Child sacrifice was practiced, which was the ancient form of abortion. And God said through the prophet, 2 Kings 21, verse 14, I will abandon the remnant of my inheritance and deliver them into the hands of their enemy. And they will become as plunder and spoil to all their enemies, because they have done evil in my sight and have provoked me to anger since the day their fathers came from Egypt, even to this day. Moreover, Manasseh shed very much innocent blood until he had filled Jerusalem from one end to the other. Also 2 Kings 24, verse 3, surely at the command of the Lord, it came upon Judah to remove them from his sight because of the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he had done, and also for the innocent blood which he shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and the Lord would not forgive. In 2 Chronicles 33, 6, we read that Manasseh made his sons, or the sons of Israel, pass through the fire in the valley of Bahinam. And Jeremiah addresses this in Jeremiah 7. But after Manasseh, the righteous king Josiah ruled, and he made reforms in the land, and it appears that he outlawed the practice of child sacrifice in Israel. 2 Kings 23:10. King Josiah also defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the sons of Hinnom. that no man might make his son or his daughter pass through the fires for Molech. But even though there was this conservative swing in Israel, God's judgment still fell upon the nation. 2 Kings 23:26. However, the Lord did not turn from the fierceness of his great wrath with which his anger burned against Judah because of all the provocations with which Manasseh had provoked him. You see, the blood guilt was still upon the land, and the people did not change their hearts intrinsically. So let's not assume that the overturning of Roe versus Wade will be the saving of America. God's word to Moses in Exodus 32 is a teachable event. Even though God would spare Israel despite the golden calf incident, God tells Moses in Exodus 32:34, but go now, lead the people where I told you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I punish, I will punish them for their sins. The judgment was delayed, but not averted. Romans chapter 2, because of your stubbornness and unrepentant heart, you are storing up wrath for yourself in the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God. God's restraining sin in this world and holding back judgment for the sake of those who are being saved, but only for so long. It looks to me like the overturning of Roe was God's blessing and reward on the pro-life movement. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10. For God is not unjust, so as to forget your work and the love which you have shown toward his name. So God gives us these little victories, these reprieves along the way, to encourage his people, to teach his people. And although they're not complete victories, they are signs of the greater victory to come at the return of Christ. And that's my final lesson. All the victories in this world are incomplete. After the Jews returned from Babylon, after 70 years of exile, were they free? No, they were still under the Persian Empire, then under the Greek Empire, then under the Romans. When communism fell in the Soviet Union after 70 years, did the Soviet Union become a Christian nation? No, it's still quite totalitarian. When slavery was ended in America after 74 years, did everyone stop being racist? No. But there is coming a day when there will be a complete, eternal, final victory for God's people. And that's why people need to get right with God and receive Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 13. But according to his promise, we are looking for a new heaven and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. And that's why I always conclude with, may Jesus Christ reign. I don't say that as a possibility, but a statement of fact, confession of faith, an agreement to, and a desire for the confession, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. May Jesus Christ reign.